Hey, everybody. As the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sanity in the 21st century. This is Phil Lairness, reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition. And you have entered the podcast zone.
It's time for another edition of Royal Radio with, from the new theatre, Royal Lincoln, the one and only Oliver Rushby. How are you?
I'm not too bad, Alex. How are you?
Yeah, okay. I mean, given the state of the world these days, we just have to be grateful that we're still functioning, really, because who knows where these things will lead us. I think it's time people went to the theatre to actually effectively forget their worries and fears and maybe engage in some escapist fun with Oscar Wilde or indeed Twisted Histories. But the first thing is, Oliver, which one do you want to talk about first? Twisted Histories or the importance of being earnest?
Yeah, let's go Twisted Tales first. That's first up, so we'll go with that one.
That makes perfect sense. And also neatly lies into why we'll be playing Tanita Tikaram and Twisting My Sobriety, because it was something I just thought was quite useful. I could have gone for history. We might well have history sort of elements within that. But this is a horrible history. This is a horrible history package, which is going to be absolutely wonderful. So share with us what's happening with this horrible history of Twisted Tales.
Yeah, so Twisted Tales, as you might have gathered from your intro there, is written by Terry Deering, who famously has written all the horrible history stories. And it's a brand new musical comedy, it's a brand new comedy, I don't think there's any music in it, for family entertainment, really. It's for young and old. And it's basically three actors, and they're performing, I think it's 100 roles in as many minutes, basically. So they're going to be here, there, and all over the place. It's set in a Victorian classroom. I think it's Mr. Pym and his two students, and they basically just go through history from whatever set date up to another day, and just it's like a horrible history. It's lots of good fun, but learn at the same time. And it's quite a nice different thing to have, really.
Well, you mentioned Terry Deary. He always likes to work his cast very hard, I think. And as you said, Mr. Pym, I wonder if he has water or just fizzy water. I don't know. Or maybe it's Pym's o'clock. Asking the significant question, can the past really tell the future? I mean, I'm just looking at some of the findings here, Ollie. Over 100 characters, 100 characters, original songs. So there is music in there.
There is music. There we go.
Yay! A whole host of twisted tales of times gone by, quite literally a show for all the family. And it's on St. Patrick's Day. What more could you ask for?
There we are. I mean, it's just amazing. I can barely remember what I had for lunch yesterday, let alone having to memorise that many roles. It's absolutely bonkers what actors have to do nowadays, but it should be good fun. It should be good fun.
It should be awesome. And as I say, it's just the one night, so people need to book ahead from that point of view.
That's it. Yeah, it's Thursday the 17th of March. Like a lot of our shows, Alex, it's here for one night and one night only, really. So you've got to get in there and make sure you don't miss it.
Absolutely. Tickets presumably just about available, because I mean, it's coming down the line fairly rapidly in this particular instance. So you're listening to this now, go and get that ticket or tickets for Horrible Histories, and you will not be disappointed.
There we go.
Okay. Well, actually, I did say Tanita Tikaram and Twisting My Sobriety. You're probably too young to remember Tanita Tikaram and that like 1980s classic. Or was it? Yes, it might have been the 1990s, actually. But I'm going to actually offer either that one or indeed the Propeller Heads with History Repeating Itself. So for our own particular choice of music in Royal Radio, would you go down the line of Propeller Heads with possibly Dame Shirley Bassey doing a cameo role in there as well? Or indeed, Tanita Tikaram and Twist in My Sobriety.
Well, I feel like you've given it such a big hype. We've got to go with, what is it, Twist in My Sobriety, is it? I feel like we've got to. You've given it all the intros, so.
Here's Tanita.
Shouldn't need traveling shoes. conscience is clear. In the morning when I wipe my brow, wipe the miles away. I like to think I can be so willed and never do what you say. I'll never hear you and never do what you say. Look, my eyes are just holograms. Look, your love has drawn red from my hands. From my hands, you know you'll never be more than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. Fun the people had at night. Late at night, don't need hostility. Timid smile and pause too free. I don't care about their different thoughts. Different thoughts are good for me. Up in arms and chasing hope. All God's children took their toll. Eyes are just holograms. Look, your love has drawn red from my hands. From my hands, you know you'll never be more than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. You pig out till you've seen the light. Pig out till you've seen the light. Half the people read the papers, read them good and well. Pretty people, nervous people, people have got to sell. My eyes are just holograms. Look, your love has drawn red from my hands. From my hands, you know you'll never be more than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. Look, my eyes are just holograms. Look, your love has drawn red from my hands. From my hands, you know you'll never be more than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety. More than twist in my sobriety.
You're listening to Royal Radio, the special bespoke podcast come radio program for Siren Radio, which is primarily produced by the new Theatre Royal Lincoln and ourselves at Siren Radio. And of course, the other exciting thing, Ollie, is that it is actually soon going to be National Pie Week. So in terms of that, yes, National Pie Week. We'll be chatting to a food historian, keeping the whole history theme going about the nation's favourite pies, which reveal here is actually the apple pie, is the UK's number one favourite pie.
I'm surprised. What's yours?
Well, I think I'm probably in number three or four, because number three is the steak and kidney pie, and number four is the chicken pie. But of course, those there are vegan alternatives. I'm doubtless in terms of that, but we'll find out a bit more about apple pies. I mean, Ollie, do they have pies at the theatre, or is that a case of no? Of course not. You know, we have wonderful food and confectionery, but we don't invest in pies.
No pies at the moment, but I love a good pie, me. So maybe I'll have to make a suggestion, won't I, really?
Well, custard pies, of course, very good for slapstick, very good for humour. Maybe custard pies could be appearing in the Easter pantomime with of course, the Jungle Book. You could have a custard pie in there as well, just saying.
I'll have to have a chat with the director, Natalie, on that one, see what she says.
It'll open up into whole wonderful ways. Now, as I say, we talked about, obviously, the new play from the writer of Horrible Histories. It's just in case, I'll just sort of make that, it's called Twisted Tales. Not in case you're sort of thinking, why is it Horrible Histories? No, it's the writer of Horrible Histories who actually has written Twisted Tales. So do not be confused. Otherwise, you might sort of feel as though, well, you know, it's not what you expected. And we always like to ensure that the New Theatre Royal provides everything in full in terms of what people expect and what they're looking for, etc. So let's move on. In fact, I'm saying that because I'm being earnest. You see what I'm doing there. You know, I'm being very earnest and very sincere when I'm saying, make sure that you know that it's connected with it, because I feel it's important, Ollie, to be earnest. What say you?
I agree, yeah. so the importance of being earnest, if you haven't gathered, is coming to the theatre. Wednesday, the 23rd of March, this one. I'm going to go out on a whim. I obviously love theatre. I work in the theatre. I love theatre. But I've actually never seen The Importance of Being Earnest.
Really? A handbag? a little line there from, a trivial comedy for serious people.
That's it. So obviously this is the famous Oscar Wilde play, which I believe he kind of wrote not too long before he actually went into prison. My history on that bit isn't too up to scratch. You probably know more about that than I do.
I wasn't going to mention his jail time, but what the hey, we've brought it up now, so just go for it.
It's an adaptation of Oscar Wilde's play by Hangfire Theatre. They haven't been to the theatre before, but I know they performed it in 2019 and it got loads of rave reviews. People saying it's the best version of the show they've seen. And they've also just come off the back of sellout tours of The 12 Pound Look and The Doll's House. So they're a great theatre company, and it's going to be really good to see them come through the door and see what they can offer us, really.
Rory Stewart, of course, is the Hangfire Artistic Director. He directs Jacob Anderton, who plays Algernon. And, of course, the speaker of A Handbag, Arabella Arnott, in her Lady Bracknell role, although she does it a lot better than I do, for obvious reasons.
I was going to say maybe you could study for that one.
I'm always available. Weddings, mitzvahs, you know the thing, Ollie. These days, you just have to sort of make a living where one can. Miss Prism, of course, is the alternate name for Lady Bracknell. Sarah Bolter plays Gwendolyn, and Jamie Brown is Jack, with Charlotte Ryder as Cicely. From that point of view, and again, this whole line of London 1895. So actually, two Victorian classics here. I mean, the Horrible Histories, not Horrible Histories, but Twisted Tales, and Mistaken Identity, both going back to before the New Theatre Royal Lincoln was even in existence.
There we go. We like to please.
Mistaken Identity and Romance colliding with cucumber sandwiches, of course, and a handbag in Wilde's trivial comedy for serious people. Jack loves Gwendolyn, Algernon loves Cecily, though both ladies are engaged to the roguish Ernest, much to the disapproval of the formidable Lady Bracknell. I won't say it again now. Unfortunately, Ernest doesn't actually exist, and when his true identity is revealed, being Ernest takes on a whole new meaning. I actually once saw this in a theatre called the Billingham Forum Theatre, which many actors used to say Billingham was probably what Ceausescu had in mind when he actually was working in Romania in terms of the city and other sort of areas. But it does actually work very well. Also, the Billingham Forum Theatre, unlike the New Theatre Royal Lincoln, actually resounded in being built very much around a leisure centre. So you'd have the waft of chlorine from the swimming pool wafting through the theatre every so often. It's an unmissable thing, and certainly was educating the Teesiders at the time to appreciate why they would never forget a handbag. Oh,
I feel like I might clip that and use it as my ringtone, actually.
we're very open. It's always open access on New Theatre Royal Lincoln. I mean, unless you don't actually sort of use the things for monetary gain, then feel free to actually apply them as and when. So, Ollie, difficult question now, but which one would you actually choose to say, that's for me? Would it be Twisted Tales, or would it be The Joys of The Importance of Being Earnest?
Well, you put me in a difficult position here, and I've got to sell them both equally. Both of them, but seeing as I don't have a family myself, I would possibly go for The Importance of Being Earnest, just because I feel like I should probably educate myself on this classic, really.
I think it was the first time I actually encountered Oscar Wilde, and I wasn't aware when I did see it about how his backstory and how clearly one of our greatest ever playwrights and indeed purveyors of wit. I think it's often said that Stephen Fry, in many ways, is our generation's Oscar Wilde, and I think he's certainly played Oscar and in times past, etc. But you know, it is something which I think if people are worried about sort of whether they'd enjoy the theatre, whether they go and see it, I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
That's it. And I think a lot of people say to us they want to see more and more plays. They don't get more iconic than this one, really. So if you haven't seen a play before at a theatre, I think it's a great introduction to that.
Yeah, very much so. So restrictions pretty much all gone now. Would you still advise people to wear masks? What's the official policy of the New Theatre Royal Lincoln?
Sure. So we basically follow all the guidance that the government pass on to us. So, like you said,
none at all, then, basically.
Well, this is it. So everything is lifted. If people want to wear face masks in the venue because that makes them feel more comfortable, that's great. If they don't want to, then that's completely their decision. I know everybody kind of has their own views on it now, don't they? I think, like everywhere else, Alex, now it's just kind of play by the rules and see.
And if you're in Ukraine, you actually have other things to worry about, but that's another line entirely. We had to mention it. No Russian oligarchs likely to be appearing in any of the performances in the near future. No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, exactly. In terms of the next stage, of course, we mentioned the Easter pantomime. We'll sort of stress it again. It's coming around the corner very quickly. The Jungle Book is happening every sense of the word. And are tickets available now? Can people actually book in for the return, the final return of the Easter pantomime to the New Theatre Royal Lincoln?
Yeah, it's third time lucky this time. So, tickets are still available. It runs from Friday the 8th till Saturday the 16th of April. It stars Chris Johnson, who people may know from CBBC channel. He's been in every single Christmas and Easter panto since 2016. So audiences love him here. He's great. You've seen him before. He's great when he's on stage. Michelle Morris from ITV's The Knock, and then a few local guys as well. We've got Chris Hayes. We've got Georgia Hayes Cowley coming back as well. So it's going to be a really fun show. And I've just seen some of the set as well, and sneakily have a look around the curtain and stuff. And it's looking really good already. So, yeah.
It is going to be, frankly, wonderful. And although neither of these particular pieces of music features in the New Theatre Royal version of the Jungle Book, would you have a penchant for I Want to Be Like You or The Bare Necessities? Where would you go?
You know what? Because I like a bit of a boogie, I think I've got to go with I Want to Be Like You, to be fair.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I wanna be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, ooby-doo, I wanna be like you. I wanna walk like you, talk like you, too. You see it's true. An ape like me can learn to be human too. Try to kid me, man cub. I made a deal with you. What I desire is man's red fire to make my dream come true. Now give me the secret, man cub. Come on, clue me what to do. Give me the power of man's red flower so I can be like you.
We have Ollie Rushby from the New Theatre Royal Lincoln doing a solo co-presentation today on New Theatre Royal Lincoln. That's because he's looking after the shop, because everybody else, Ollie, Alex and Natalie, they're all partying somewhere, no doubt, and actually sort of doing all sorts of other areas. It's the way things are, really. So in terms of other sort of events that are coming through, I mean, talk to us about how people can actually get more involved with theatre. Obviously, websites, the socials, all things like that. We were talking recently about a production, of course, which shows how CAODS, CAODS, the County Amateur Operatic Dramatic Society, are actually developing. And you might like to share with the listener, how did that open evening actually go in terms of the event and people actually turning up and taking part in what obviously is going to be quite a fascinating performance in the latter part of this year of Sweeney Todd the Musical?
That's right, yeah. I'm not going to lie, I wasn't here because I was busy away doing some tippity-tappity myself. So, but I spoke to the guys that were here and they said it ran really well. There was about 100 plus people here. Some of them are Chaos members and some of them aren't as well. I kind of just gave the lowdown what were the plans. It was obviously like this as well. This was supposed to go ahead in November 2020. So it's been in the pipeline a long old time. So they kind of just discussed what the show was about. Ian, our resident stage manager, he was involved in it as well, chat about set, lighting, all that kind of thing. And for me, I love Sweeney Todd. It's a show I did as a kid, actually. And obviously, we've all seen the film and all that. It's got some great music in there. Obviously, it's a Sondheim as well, which is even more pertinent now, given his passing not too long ago. So, yeah, I think we're all buzzing to see a full-scale musical. Chaos always do a great job. So we're looking forward to that.
Excellent. We were digging out, again, music for this particular routine, a whole variety of other sort of aspects, but Oscar Wilde actually didn't do much singing, and there's very little singing in The Importance of Being Earnest. So all I could really come up with is Cambodia by Kim Wilde. Does that suit?
I like what you've done there. I'm up for that.
All right, we've had a kind of slightly surreal version of the latest version of Royal Radio as we continue onwards. But let's get some of the details down now in terms of finding out further details about events and scores. We've talked about three shows, obviously, in particular. Lots more, of course, occur. Ollie, give us the rundown. How can people actually stay appraised of what's happening as far as the new Theatre Royal Lincoln is concerned?
Sure thing. Obviously, online is the easiest way, so ntrlincoln.co.uk. You give it a box office call, 01522 519999. I've memorised that well. Obviously, we're all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That's where you see all the kind of behind-the-scenes content as well, especially around Panto Time. That's really fun. We also have our What's On brochures. We've got one that covers up to the end of May, and then about a month's time, we'll have another one as well, which shows all the upcoming shows within the next few months. So, yeah, we're pretty much everywhere. Come in and say hello to us.
The way forward. And I've got to say, actually, in terms of just returning to the focus of this one, Twisted Tales, tickets from £18. That's not bad at all, actually, in terms of the kind of costs we're actually faced with in all manner of other bits and pieces. You can, of course, as you rightly said, Ollie, go to newtheatreroyallincoln.co.uk and book tickets from that point of view. You've even got concessions at £12 as well, which is even more wonderful from that point of view. So if you're umming and ahhing and you're thinking, oh, maybe I should go to the theatre, maybe I shouldn't go to the theatre, go now, go quickly, book the whole sequence through there and make sure you actually have a fabulous time, because that's pretty much what theatre's for. It's live, it's in person, it's dynamic, it's what basically Lincoln's new Theatre Royal Lincoln was built for.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him, 'cause I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythm and blues. I was a lonely teenage bronc and buck with a pink carnation and a pickup truck. But I knew I was out of luck the day the music died. I started singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone. But that's not how it used to be. When the jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down waiter stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. Day that I die. Help the skelter in the summer swelter. The birds flew off with a fallout shelter, 8 miles high and falling fast. It landed foul on the grass. The players tried for a forward pass with the jester on the sidelines in a cast. Played a marching tune. We all got up to dance. Oh, but we never got the chance. As the players tried to take the field, the marching band refused to yield. Do you recall what was revealed the day the music died? We started singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Clenched in fists of rage, no angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight. The day the music died, he was singing. I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news, but she just smiled and turned away. I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken, and the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died. And they were singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. They were singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die."
Well, one of the unanswered questions over history has surely been, who ate all the pies? Maybe it was the citizens of Britain. But we are heading into National Pie Week, and who better to actually talk about how pies have changed in popularity, how people actually didn't used to eat the pastry that the food was actually made in the pie, and other fascinating features than ace food historian extraordinaire. It's the fabulous Polly Russell. How are you, Polly?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Always delighted to touch base with your good self. And particularly about this specific story, which nothing to do with mathematics and pi r squared, of course, but very much the whole notion of pies and how Apple is actually the nation's favourite pie. Surely that would have been a kind of American thing. Or is that another case of transatlantic impacts coming back to Britain?
Yeah, I think that it might be. And I was really surprised by that as well, though, in the survey that the co-op did, that they discovered that the apple pie is apparently the nation's favourite, even though when people were asked, do they prefer savoury pies to sweet pies overall, most people said they preferred savoury pie. But nevertheless, the apple pie sort of became the champion pie for most people, but followed quite quickly by a steak pie, which is obviously solidly savoury.
Now, one of the questions that I was keen to put to you, and I know we've discussed this in the past, is when does a pie become a pasty or a pasty become a pie? Because there is a subtle difference or indeed similarity between the two forms, surely.
Alex, you just won't leave this thorny question alone, will you? Because we're wading into territory that I think perhaps we should let the Cornish decide. I sound like, you know, so I think in the definition of what do we mean by a pie, part of why the pie is so enduring is because of its versatility. So in its kind of broadest sense, it's a filling encased with usually pastry. So in that definition, the Cornish pasty definitely fits within the definition of a pie. But of course, there are also pies which wouldn't fit within that strict definition, something like a shepherd's pie or a cottage pie. Is that a pie? Well, it is a pie because it's something encased and topped, and most people define it as such. So I think that the sort of borders of what is and isn't a pie are quite malleable. But generally speaking, I would say that the Cornish pasty has many of the components, or if not all of the components, of what a pie is.
4 in 20 blackbirds, of course, for once, I think, baited a pie, according to the famous line. What about the ingredients of pies over the years? Have we become less adventurous, more adventurous? I mean, looking at the range of ingredients, I mean, obviously apple and steak at the top there, but we've also got cauliflower cheese and broccoli, pecan pie, pork pie. But did we used to be even more adventurous? Did we used to take blackbirds and put them in a pie?
Well, I think that certainly the blackbirds in a pie, we did eat blackbird pie, but also this idea of live birds in a pie actually has a kind of real history, which is that pies were used to sort of for display, used to be kind of fantastical at the banquets of the most opulent. And there's an account in a recipe book from the 1660s by Robert May of an idea that if you fill pastry case with live birds and also live frogs, when you serve it and it says in there something like the ladies lift the lid, they will shriek and laugh when the birds fly out and the frogs hop out. So this kind of live birds in a pie, this is part of kind of medieval entertainment, sort of Tudor entertainment. But in terms of fillings, pies are so versatile that people have always been creative with pies. They are, of course, very useful for using up leftovers for making do with what you have, but also they're a fantastic vehicle for display. So people have long been creative with pies as well.
Perhaps it was the tendency to actually put live animals in the pies that actually suggested that the people wouldn't actually consume the pastry of the pie. They didn't know what other sort of bits and pieces they might be getting. Just a thought.
Well, maybe, but actually, the sort of genesis of the pie in the medieval Britain was that the pie case was really more of a sort of vehicle for storage. So it was made with pastry. The pastry was made with rye flour and hot water into this very sort of stiff paste that would be kind of grey and probably quite unappetizing looking. And it was really a kind of pot, a holding pot, something that you could transport and crucially that you could store food in. So you'd then fill that, cook it, drain away the gravy, put the lid on, fill it with butter through a hole so it was sealed, and that would allow you to keep that container of food for months or weeks without it going off, and then it could be reheated and served. But the pastry holding it was sometimes called a coffin, was then discarded mostly because it just wasn't very edible. And it's not until the Tudor period that you get pastry made with eggs and butter and fats like we know, and you get that sort of delicious edible pastry that we now so associate with a pie.
Actually, mince pies used to be coffin shaped as well in Victorian times, if I recall. Obviously, an obsession with passing from one world to the next. Polly, you very capably and ably actually dealt with the pasty pie question. But what about whether a pie should have a lid or whether it actually has to have a base? Is that another issue that could actually, in many ways, lead to major conflict?
Well, I think, again, it just depends on it. Look, it depends. And the Co-op survey suggests that most people, I think 60% of people, thinks that a pie must have a lid. It doesn't have to have a base. But then 45% of people think it must have a base and it doesn't necessarily have to have a lid. So I think that in its kind of purest form, a pie is probably fully encased. But it can also be just with a lid or with a case. I think either which way works. The point about a pie, it seems to me, is that it is always a sort of treat to eat. And I think it's because it's a sort of edible present, isn't it? It kind of, you know, it's kind of has this element of surprise when you break into the pastry. And I think that is partly why it's so popular, whether it's a pie that you just are eating at a football match, you know, on the hoof when you're hungry and it's really filling and delicious and warming, or if it's pie that's being served up for a really special event.
I was a little surprised by the finding that 71% of UK adults say British ingredients in pies are important. Does that suggest that 29% don't care what goes in the pies? And frankly, Sweeney Todd would have an ideal opportunity to sell to them if he were going today.
Now, I think maybe, I mean, I think it's interesting. 71% of people, you know, really like to know where the ingredients have come from. And I think that's why the Co-op range of pies is so appealing, because not only is it sort of tapping into this long tradition of British pies, but, you know, whatever pie you buy from Co-op, whatever part of whichever range you buy, you can be guaranteed that the meat is coming from British farmers. So you know that you're also supporting British farmers, which I think a lot of people, you know, are increasingly wanting to do. But the 29% who say they don't care, I bet they would care if you pushed them.
Well, it's just an interesting line there. Of course, there is the need for having a suitable partner for the pie. And I see that chips or potatoes in one shape or form actually really attends to almost half of the whole thing, whether it's standard mashed potatoes or indeed chips, mushy peas actually in there, baked beans, vegetables, gravy. These are all traditional staples, aren't they, Polly?
Yeah, well, I mean, not so... I suppose mashed potato, chips, beans, it's all sort of 20th century accompaniments, I would think. Well, mashed potatoes probably goes back before then, but 20th century. But absolutely, again, people have got their sort of own favourites, and any of those, you know, any of those are deemed suitable. But it is surprising that the popularity of chips, I think, with pie compared to mash. I thought mash would be the most popular.
Now, as I say, that list of the nation's favourite pies available from the Co-op course: apple, steak, nail, chicken and mushroom, steak and kidney in the top five, shepherd's pie, lemon meringue, cottage, chicken and gravy further down the system. Most of us, apparently, according to the survey, eat one pie per week. So, Polly, I've got to ask you the question, as an ace food historian, what is your favourite pie?
I've got two favourite pies, if I may. One is it's a classic chicken pie. Absolutely love it. Kind of really rich and creamy with a flaky pastry. But the other favourite pie for me is pie of my childhood, which my grandpa used to make, which was a savoury mince pie. And that was, I mean, his pastry was to die for. And the fill was just amazing.
You see, this is the thing about being a food historian. You can also get the listeners mouth watering and saliva just thinking at the thought of the pie. A little disappointed not to see any cherry pie in there, I must admit. I thought the Twin Peaks effect of damn good cherry pie might have actually appeared, but maybe it would have been further down the list.
Yeah, I think that is a very American, isn't it, a cherry pie? I don't know many people that make cherry pie or not regularly make cherry pie, I would say, here. But it's kind of very iconically American, I suppose, in the same way that apple pie is. But how about this? What about if we revived this pie, Alex, which is my favourite pie of all time, which is from an 1845 recipe book by Francatelli, which is a Yorkshire pie for which he calls the fill has a whole turkey, a brace of pheasants and a whole York ham, amongst other things. And it takes 2 days to make.
And probably 2 weeks to actually work off the calories. But never mind, that's part of the whole thing. And I do see actually cherry pie is in the list. It's actually sandwiched between chicken and leek pie and beef and onion pie. Not necessarily the best way forward, but it's still interesting. Polly, where can people find out further details about this co-op serving ahead of a course of National Pie Week?
Yeah, on the co-op website, co-op.co.uk.
Excellent. Of course, there is, going back to that Cornish pasty thing, the Melton Mowbray pork pie, which is another key thing, which I know citizens of Melton Mowbray are very proud of their association with the pork pie. That's for another time, of course. Two final questions, of course. As ever, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today, being number one?
I've loved it. Thank you so much.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you be kind enough to return to talk more about food across the ages?
Anytime. I'd love to come back.
Food historian Polly Russell, a huge thanks and happy National Pie Week.
You too, Alex. Bye-bye.
Peter Parsop Edison had a big named Porky. This big named Porky loved pie. He loved pizza pie, pumpkin pie, pineapple pie, pizza pie, mince tarts. And Peter Parsop Edison's big Porky loved pie for breakfast, pie for lunch, pie in the afternoon, and pie before he went to bed. Ursula Patterson's big Porky ate so much pie that, do you know what he did? He popped.